Rob Spall. I'm the head of communications at IPBIS, the World Biodiversity Platform for Science and Policy.
And I'm Britt Garner. I'm a science communicator and PhD student in interdisciplinary studies.
Welcome to Nature Insight.
Speed dating with the future.
As hard as it is to believe, this is the last episode of our first season of Nature Insight. For the past few weeks, we've been introducing you to some extraordinary individuals who are part of the wider IPBIS community and who work on the front lines of research, policy, and action for nature.
They've helped us share key insights and perspectives about the relationship between humans and biodiversity with you, our listeners, to help us all understand more about the incredible values of nature and our connection to it.
When we decided to start this podcast, we had no idea we'd be recording this series during a period of such great global upheaval. Right now, every one of you listening in your own home or office, your own environment or habitat, has a unique perspective on the particular impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. Many of you may remember our first episode when Britt and I shared sounds from our own lockdown experiences. Britt, are the wolves still howling in Missoula?
Yes, they are, Rob. A bit thinned out, but definitely still there. I've got a little piece for you. Every night at 8 p.m. our time, we are still howling in appreciation for our frontline workers who are putting themselves on the line every day for all of us. So at night, we howl like wolves. And in the day, especially for myself, while I am either experiencing more screen time or inside more, I do have one delightful, less wild constant companion. Yes, that is sweet baby Jane, our script supervisor. In fact, whether you knew it or not, that is my wonderful companion cat who has been here the entire way for the series, every single recording, and also here for me every single day, and a constant reminder of how we are so incredibly connected to other species, whether it's inside our house, outside our house, or even in the way we use our own human voices to reflect and connect to them.
Yes, we've loved having Jane as our not-so-silent co-presenter when we've connected on Zoom. You may remember the sounds that I shared with you from my habitat in that first episode, mostly loud construction noises. But much as the lockdown itself has changed for us here in Germany, the sounds of my neighborhood have also kept pace, and I'm relieved to say these days there's much less knocking and hammering, and much more of the peaceful bird noises. I think it's really interesting how we react so differently to different noises, and how, for most of us, the sounds of nature often equate to peace and to rest.
It's true, though, as we discussed in the first episode, it is possible they are just yelling about putting that twig there to build that nest. Rob, have you confirmed with the birds if they are still in construction, or is this their downtime as well?
I haven't, but my daughter really thinks that that interpretation that you gave in the first episode is now every time we hear a bird, that's how she interprets it.
And isn't that so funny? You know, something that we say as an aside can absolutely have an effect not only on children, but just on everyone. The way that we see and think about those things we live next to and live with, and then the way that that actually has a value associated. So if we are thinking about those bird sounds as this wonderful, majestic, peaceful thing, that value we connote to the sound is totally different than that which would be given to, oh yeah, the birds are yelling about building the nest. And this is one of the reasons that I am so excited about the last extraordinary individual of this season's podcast. It is Brigitte Baptiste, one of the co-chairs of the IPBIS Values Assessment.
I've had the real privilege of working with Brigitte for more than 4 years now. And in many ways, she really does embody this idea of bridge building between cultures, between knowledge systems, and especially between academia and the realities of the challenges that we're actually trying to address on a daily basis. And I think it's one of the reasons that she's such a wonderful choice to co-chair the IPBIS Values Assessment, because that's a role that's actually much less about writing the report and much more about bringing together what all of the other authors are doing into a powerful, coherent, policy-relevant final product.
And speaking of final products, let's go ahead and formally introduce our final interviewee for this season of Nature Insight. Brigitte Baptiste studied the management of biodiversity, biocomplexity, and biopolitics. She was the general director of the Alexander von Humboldt Biological Resources Research Institute for almost 10 years, and she's now the director of Universidad EAN in Colombia and a member of IPBES's multidisciplinary expert panel. And she is also, as you said, one of the co-chairs of the IPBES Values Assessment. I spoke with Brigitte in Colombia, and we started at the very beginning by first defining what we mean by values.
There's really, really a great diversity of meanings that the whole team and the different cultures that we are working with attribute to the idea of values. For us, is kind of the importance that people give to biodiversity, which can be in terms of economic value, but as well in terms of cultural value, which is less tangible, is more complex to grasp. As an example, forest may mean very different things for different people. Sometimes we think about forest as a resource, as a source of wood, a source of bushmeat, a source of many different materials. But for other people, the forest is the place to walk in, to enjoy, to be inspired. While for other people, the forest is a key part of ecological functions and ecological security. We tend to value the forest depending on how close, how related are we to the trees or the different components of the forest.
It's so fascinating to hear you mention forest as a single example. I start to think about individual species even. So a single species can have widely different ways of being viewed by different people and communities. I think about myself, and sharks are my favorite animal. They have been since I was really little. And my dad and I love to go scuba diving together. And we specifically one time off the coast of North Carolina in the Atlantic Ocean went and did a shark scuba dive. We were on a shipwreck, and my dad and I made sure to seek out every single shark we could so that I could see all of the sharks. And my dad and I were just so excited, and there was such intense both aesthetic value and just wonder. And yet, we got topside, called my mom afterward and told her about just how awesome the dive was. And the first thing she said was, "Michael, so help me God, if that child had been bitten by a shark, I don't even know where to start with this. Are you out of your mind?" And you can imagine how the conversation went. But my mom did not value the sharks quite the way that my father and I did. And it's a small example, but it really does show you can have, even within the same family unit, a completely different response to or valuing of a different species or system.
Well, that's a very nice example about swimming with sharks. I had to work for a few years with the indigenous communities in the northern part of Colombia, where they live from capturing turtles, the big sea turtles that are endangered, that are protected. But they have done that for decades. It's a source of income. It's a source of food. They eat the eggs and the animals. In some way, it's traditional. But then they moved to a market place and started to sell the turtles and the meat prepared by some different recipes. And they got very successful. And then the turtles start to become scarce and to be more important in terms of money value than in terms of tradition. And then we started to discuss with them how to create kind of a quota or to differentiate from both types of values. And finally, they accepted to free the small turtles, to just catch some amount every year, and also to help to monitor in exchange of technical support and other types of assistance. But at the end, everybody was so afraid of breaking the law because the turtles are international acknowledged endangered animals that to allow even a small quota would broke these international agreements. The tradition of the fisheries was not well established. So we went into a mess of different types of values, none of which were really clear to support policy. Finally, I must tell that the project didn't succeed. Now the capture of turtles is going on a very hard rate, and the only control is made by police. Nobody is really being able to solve the initial problem. From that experience, I learned that values are not fixed, that values change through time, change because of communication, because of intercultural relationships, and there are many, many pathways for value modification. And then you have to be aware that building global values is probably not feasible, but also keeping those local values forever is also very complicated. Therefore, you need to understand history, you need to understand ecology, you need to understand laws, and of course, all the surrounding conditions to take better decisions.
Have there been any personal experiences you've had that have really helped you to embrace the values of nature for each of us?
I think valuing diversity is something that grows with you with very early experiences. And I was taught by my father to fish in the sea when I was very young. But he always told me to respect the fish that I caught and to eat them as a first duty. So every time I fish something with the happiness of capturing and being successful in an activity, then I had to prepare the fish and to eat and share with my family and say thank you to the life of that fish. Since then, and I'm not a religious person, but I always have thought that the other's being's life is sacred. It's sacred because you cannot bring life to anybody. You can plant seeds, you can help raise young animals, and you can try to protect all the biodiversity, but you cannot bring life back to any of them. And that is part of my daily life with my own girls, my kids, and it's behind our discussions and not wasting anything. You don't have the right to throw out a piece of meat that comes from a living being. And it's a heavy ethical discussion, but for the daily life, I think this shaped very much my education and all my experience then as a biologist.
So much of what you do within the values assessment and co-chairing is bridging multiple viewpoints, and that requires sensitivity and also acceptance. In what ways have your own life experiences enabled you or set you up to be able to accept and take in and be sensitive to multiple viewpoints?
Having had the opportunity to travel around the world has made me very sensitive to the cultural diversity of the world and how things that are completely normal for some cultures that are completely awful for others, because we really need to understand their ecological context. We really need to understand their historical processes, the livelihoods. The problem is that we cannot judge something that we see from distance. You know, that this is always this appreciation of the Japanese whaling and the Norwegian whaling as something that is totally in against the rights of animals. But they have an explanation. They have a long history of doing this capturing of whales, which I don't like, but they have an argument.
It sounds like with this kind of a role, you have to be able to give space to a lot of nuance and a lot of different voices. What are some things you need to be aware of or reflect on when you're in the process of bringing so many different thoughts and values together?
Possibly a certain kind of balance between view worlds, because the differences are very big. There's people that refuses to give any economic value to biodiversity. And on the other hand, there's people that refuses to give enough importance to other types of values. And then you have to make sure that everybody has a voice. There's many, many sources of knowledge in many other forms of expression. For example, stories usually replace or are even they exist before written text. In many cultures that do not have a written alphabet, tales encompass all the knowledge about the behavior of animals, moral discussions on the rights of them into the culture, duties that the communities have towards them. For example, tapirs are sacred in the Amazon because they are scarce. They rumble through the forest, performing many ecological functions, but also they are deities because they usually are ancestors of the people. Therefore, it won't be acceptable to hunt and eat them as ancestors. So that's a really interesting source of information for biodiversity evaluation. But that takes more time. This has been quite tricky. There's little information sometimes for many of those worldviews. So IPBES has opened a way to include other systems of knowledge manifestations. There's an open call for contributions from local communities and indigenous groups that now it's open, and we are hoping that many, many people can contribute, and we accept contributions in written form, taped material, songs and stories, whatever a community considers it can illustrate IPBES about the importance of biodiversity.
You spoke about equalizing voices and making sure that when you bring so many different ways of thinking, systems of knowledge and people into the conversation, that we have some kind of equality across the board of voices being able to speak. How do we represent those that are not in the room?
I don't know how many cultural groups are in the world, but at least in Colombia, we are more than 100 with the living languages, with their own perceptions and ways of doing things. And it's impossible to bring them all to the assessment. You need to get information from previous assessments, and then we invite some of the, we cannot call representatives, but some of the leaders of such worldviews to contribute as contributing authors or by means of workshops, dialogues that have been designed to catch information that usually is not available anywhere. And at least a way to acknowledge that there are plenty of visions, alternative ways of thinking, values all around the world.
You mentioned that it wasn't representatives, but rather leaders that were able to comment. What do you think is the main difference between leaders versus representatives?
Every culture has different institutions and different ways of understanding leadership, understanding who knows what and giving support to that knowledge. For example, women in many communities are responsible for food production. And if they are in charge of gardening, they will give a specific role to plants and nurturing and edible biodiversity. Within this diversity of roles, we cannot ask or rubber stamp the name of one person as a representative if their culture is not organized in that way. So what we invite is a person that is acknowledged by its peers, by its colleagues, by its communities, as people that knows about the values and views of that culture, and they are willing to help or to allow him or her to participate in these dialogues.
Could you give an example maybe of a time when there was something that you were not aware of personally before engaging or having a conversation, and perhaps it totally changed either the language you used or the way that you considered one of these thoughts or topics?
Well, something that has shifted very much from the beginning is the construction of nature within IPBES. Nature is a cornerstone for all the IPBES work. It's so important as a notion, and sometimes we take it for granted. And for regional or for the global assessment or other assessments, to talk about nature is kind of a convention that everybody understands. But then when talking about values, Do you realize that nature begins to become something much more complex? Because are you in? Are you out? Do nature surrounds you? Even the word nature has different meanings in different languages. In some languages, the word doesn't exist at all because people do not create a separation between society and the rest of biodiversity. Let's think about our bodies. We are organic. We have a particular anatomy, and everything is rooted on biological processes. We need to understand that everything we do is natural in a way, and we are the ones that define what is nature within our language and our cultural rules. And so nature is a cultural definition, and different cultures define nature in different ways. And we are still struggling with that, I won't lie about.
You and me both. I am on a journey with a capital J when it comes to the idea of what is nature, which I used to think was so obvious. It's been a few years so far, I believe about 3 years so far for the values assessment. And so with something that takes a lot of time, because it needs to, because it has to, you know, get it right, or at least to the best of our abilities, and consider so many different ways of thoughts and knowledge and pieces. What are the dangers of rushing something like this versus the dangers of it moving too slowly when the issue is so acute as biodiversity losses?
Well, the balance is really tricky. The basic discussion about what it means to value, it's taking lots of time. Many people in the assessment are academics, so they like the issue of discussing concepts very much, but that's unavoidable. It makes richer the work. So the building of an official truth around the world is quite complicated. IPBES is not a conveyor of truth, luckily, but all the governments will accept certain findings that should be part of their policies in the future. So it's we are quite aware of this risk, especially with the issue of values. You can really create more conflict if you are not really careful.
The podcast is called Nature Insight, Speed Dating with the Future. And this idea is that we were kind of thinking of sitting down with someone and having a very small amount of time to communicate the things that are most important to you, or that could, you know, change your life or change the life of the person that you are speaking with. If you were speed dating with these issues closest to your heart, the subjects of values, biodiversity, what are those things that you would really want to say?
Well, I think that I will really try to share my personal experience related to biodiversity, but related also with my body. And I think that we are part of the biological world, and we really need to recover that relationship. And for me, I have plenty of moments in my own story that are completely significant when I think who I am and where did I found a sense of purpose in life. And it usually goes back to childhood when I get in touch with nature, whatever it is. But when I swam with wild fish in the Amazon during my biology studies, when I walk on the mountain. So that's so important, this embodiment of biodiversity and the natural world. And I would like to offer to the next generations the opportunity to swim in the same rivers that I swam in, or to interact with the same birds I interacted in my city, in my home city. This is kind of a feeling of wanting to share, but also a feeling of rights you deserve for the future. And this is completely intertwined with the existence of nature.
It sounds like, regardless of if it's about nature or our bodies or values or systems of knowledge, that all of these things are in such an incredible spectrum and really not a binary system or some kind of a black and white. There are just a million variations in these things that are in the world around us and ourselves. And I just really appreciate you spending time with us to talk a little bit about that and how that's contributing to this values assessment.
Thank you for this great conversation, Brit.
I am so thankful to have had the opportunity to speak to Brigitte Baptiste. And I just felt it was amazing to hear her talk about the interface of values and how many different ways that people can think and feel about nature, and oftentimes in ways that are conflicting, but that communication can really be the solution here. And, you know, there is so much truth to this idea of things existing on a spectrum instead of some strict binary. And certainly we see this all the time, not only in our own lives, as Brigitte was mentioning, but also in the consideration of something as big as values within the conversation of biodiversity and conservation.
And definitely. And one of the things that I think you can't do is to lead something like an assessment on values by only taking an academic approach or an approach that's informed by learning, as opposed to a personal understanding of the differences of values. And I think in your interview with her, Britt, what really shone through for me was the depth of understanding that Brigitte has about the different values that people hold and the different values that people ascribe on a very personal level to their relationships with nature and the contributions that they get from nature. It also, I think, demonstrates very well why it's so important for us to assemble authors for these types of assessments that come from such a wide range of disciplines and from different backgrounds.
And you know, as we talk about different and varied voices, we've only had 6 episodes, and yet I feel like I've spoken to so many different people and different systems of and ways of thinking, thought, knowledge, science, policy. I'm so thankful to have been able to speak to such a wide-ranging group of people in this series, despite this having only been 6 episodes so far.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, Britt. Looking back over 6 episodes of the podcast, and a number of really great calls to action from within those 6 episodes, what are the calls to action that have really stood out for you?
One of the calls to action that really resonated with me when I think of communicating with younger students was from Dr. Ann Polina, talking about waking the snake, talking about waking a consciousness. I'm really excited to include the ideas that she presented in her research to students who are here in the United States that may not otherwise be exposed to these stories and exposed to these knowledge systems. So that's on an educational level. But for me personally, I think about Dr. Kai Chan and think about how minute incremental change might not be the way forward. I'm really going to think and feel deeply about that in my own life and whether incremental is the way or if we need these major actions that we simply aren't in a position to do tiny adjustments along the way as individuals. And I don't have an answer for that, but I know that it affected me greatly and will occupy that thinking and feeling space for me for sure.
I'm hoping that a lot of the conversations that we've had have also had an impact on our listeners, because they've certainly had an impact on us as the interviewers, where I think both you and I have said time and again that we've been thinking in new ways about some of the complexity that we're dealing with. We've been thinking in new ways about values. We've been thinking in new ways about the value of action and individual action and global action. But I think it's also, as a podcast, I think it's achieved something which I didn't expect as much. And that is, it really has shown the tremendous depth within the IPBIS community of experience and of knowledge and of understanding and of insight. I mean, we called the podcast Nature Insight because a lot of the voices we've been hearing from are not the standard IPBIS leadership voices. They're not the people who are usually the spokespersons who are standing on the stages, with the possible exception of Brigitte, who has done that. But really, I think giving an opportunity for the stakeholders within the IPBIS community to make their point about the values of nature, I'm really hoping that that has been something that we've achieved. And when we talk about stakeholders, I think the concept of stakeholders can be a little bit overdone and a little bit hard to understand for many people. With IPBIS, a stakeholder is anybody who can either contribute to the work that we're doing or benefit from the work that we've done or about to do.
The year 2020 was supposed to be the year of biodiversity, at least within some international frameworks. And as someone who studies international policy for wildlife conservation, I was so looking forward to this. And as COVID-19 hit and has swept across the world, the focus has become more so on one species, on our own, making sure that we are going to get out of this and that we are going to be okay. And at first, I was concerned that we might lose sight of all of those other species as we try to make sure that we are safe. And yet, by doing this podcast, I've been reminded that it doesn't have to be one or the other. We can be thinking about our own healthiness and happiness, but also be considering the long-term effects and how this is even related to nature in the first place. And I'm so thankful to have done these episodes to be reminded of that and to have our own little slice of that year of biodiversity, even if it's so different than what we originally anticipated.
So from Missoula, Montana, and from Bonn, Germany, that's it for today and indeed for this series of Nature Insight. We hope you've enjoyed joining us for these weekly speed dates with the future.
If you've missed anything, do go back and listen to the other 5 episodes in this series. And thank you all for being a part of this journey and part of the storytelling process with us.
And stay in touch with IPBES's work. You can find us on our website at www.ipbes.net or on any of our social media channels. Just search for @IPBES. That's @IPBES.